There is a wide open space filled with the incentive to grow right in front of our eyes. But we simply have not trained ourselves to see it. And so we ask, how can we see the incentive to grow?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1,252nd edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends over there in Giza Village who are tuned into the podcast as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, this from Metro Farm, the guide to growing for profit in or near the city, for the city, by yours truly, Michael Olson. They came to America to take advantage of a new frontier. Land, plentiful and cheap, was incentive to grow, and grow they did. In a very few short years, the immigrants cultivated the wide open spaces out of existence, and then they moved into the city. Land is not cheap anymore. Indeed, space sells for a big premium, and immigrants are an endangered species. Nevertheless, there still exists a frontier of vacant lots, scrub-covered hillsides, green belts, floodplains, and other small parcels of little-used or unused land near population centers. That land is a frontier filled with the incentive to grow. The question is, how can one profitably farm small parcels of land when most all of American agriculture is tuned in to farming commodity crops on large parcels of land? You know, there's a Secretary of Agriculture, F.H. King. He found the answer nearly 120 years ago when he visited the farmers of rural China. This from his book, Farmers of 40 Centuries. The man walking down the row with his manure pail swinging from his shoulder informed us on his return that in his household there were 20 to be fed, that from his garden of half an acre of land he usually sold a product bringing in $400. Now consider the accomplishment of that farmer of 40 centuries. With a one-half-acre farm, he fed a family of 20 people and generated what today would be $14,000 in cash income. Ladies and gentlemen, a half acre is like a big backyard. Clearly, the answer to how to farm small parcels of land in or near the city for the city lies in the efficient use of space. And who better to direct us how to use space efficiently than those who do not have a lot of space to work with? And so today we take you to where space really is a premium, and that would be the nation of Israel, for a conversation with a man who has a different way of looking at space. He is Guy Elitzur, who is the CEO of Vertical Field Company. Guy, welcome to Food Chain Radio.
Hey, Michael. How are you doing?
I'm doing really good. And how are you doing?
I'm fine. Not too bad. Not too bad.
Good. Now, Vertical Field Company. So what you do is you take a parcel of land and turn it up on its edge. My gosh, how did you come to do that?
So I think that in Vertical Field, we acknowledge over the years that the life in the city are changing. And in order to provide better and healthier life in the city, you have to think differently. And definitely where we left as humankind the forest and come to the city and build building over building, we forgot nature outside. And when you want to bring nature and growing food into the city, you definitely have to consider the space. And space and land in the city are very expensive. And by growing plants and crops in a vertical way, using less space and less water, definitely is part of the solution to grow the food inside the city.
Now, so this is the way of making a vertical farming is a way of making a little space into a lot of space. And when we're going to head off in that, before we head off in that direction, I have a question to ask with respect to Israel and the technology of space-intensive agriculture. I had the occasion a number of years ago to have a consulting work on the island of Cyprus, and the job was to find a marketable crop the farmers of Cyprus could sell into the European marketplace and make some money, and thus, you know, reestablish an agriculture that has been dissipating rapidly. Now, what I learned really quickly was that Israel was really clever about how they were growing crops and how they were selling those crops into the European marketplace. And I realized that the farmers of Cyprus, to compete with those farmers of Israel, would have to be very, very, very clever. So my question to you, Guy, is how did the Israeli farmers get to be so clever at the use of space?
It's a good question. I believe that the situation where we are small countries with small land, 60% out of that is desert, and needs to sustain food and grow food. Over the years, we, as Israelis, we have developed a lot of technology and innovation around agriculture, whether it's irrigation, pesticide, biopesticides, technology, precise agriculture. Out of that, I would say survival mode, we have cracked part of the challenges that we had here and innovate different ways of farming, growing, packing, and doing the entire agriculture cycle in a way that we provide edge versus the other markets.
So in a sense, the reason you became so clever at farming small parcels of land was that you had to survive. Simple as that.
Correct.
There it
Simple
was.
Simple as that.
And that's a great encouragement to get one to think in different sorts of ways, is that you simply must, because there's no other way to do it. And I guess one of my favorite examples of the technology that came out of Israel would be drip irrigation.
Is that right? Exactly. Yes, exactly. Drip irrigation was invented and developed here in the country. Correct.
Mm-hmm. And so along comes Guy with this incredible new kind of way of seeing things, the Vertical Field Company. How did you come to vertical farming in the first place, Guy?
So the Vertical Field exists from 2006. We have developed a different vertical growing platform for horticulture, whether it's a vertical forest, green walls, green roofs, and integrated that as part of integral elements in green buildings. And taking this know-how into vertical farming, in the last couple of years, we have developed our vertical farm in a way that I think that what guided us is the fact that lack of land, lack of water, and the view that more people are coming to live in the city, and definitely part of the food need to be grown locally in the city.
Mm-hmm. So I always like to make a distinction between gardening and farming. And it sounds like you folks got at Vertical Fields, got your start gardening, in that you were making nice ornamental pieces for the inside of buildings, correct?
Correct, exactly. That's exactly how we started. It all started as a design feature, but over the years we have developed more values around vertical horticulture, whether it's purification of air, biophilia, reduction of temperature, using nature and technology, and basically position that as an integral component in building.
Right. Gardening. Making life better. My gardening, yeah. So good. And now you've taken that technology and moved it into farming, which is a commercial enterprise in which you seek to generate income by growing crops that people need in the city. Well, how did you come to the city? We look at cities and they're all concrete. Yuck. Who wants to grow crops in the city? But that's what you're suggesting. We can do this.
Correct. That's exactly what you're suggesting to do, and that's what exactly we're doing. We believe that part of living in the city, we need to grow food in the city. I think it provides, on top of health and environmental impact, it enriches the life in the city, and it provides health to population that do not reach healthy food. And where you can do it, when you can do it in the city, nearby the place that the food is consumed, definitely you provide different types of quality of food. And we know the direct connection between food and health and quality of life. And if you bring something good, then it has a direct impact on your quality, the quality of your life, and the and the life that you're living in the city. And most of us are living in the city.
And you can certainly see that change by watching watching the countenance of city people when they're shopping at a farmer's market or something like that, where they're engaged directly with their food and the people who grow their food. You know, they have a smile on their face that you don't see too often when they're fighting their way through the big box store or something like that. And so it really does have a way of changing the atmosphere in which we all live. And where in the city do you see the greatest opportunity for the vertical farming guy?
We have developed a vertical farm inside the container. So first, there is an environmental statement here where you can recycle a container and reuse it.
So that's like shipping containers?
Exactly. That's exactly shipping containers. Correct.
Wow. So all of those shipping containers we're getting from China, we could turn into farms. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. 100%. So you can put them anywhere.
You can put it anywhere in the parking lot, on the top of a roof of a restaurant. It's portable. You can move it to whenever you want, and basically you can start your own farm anywhere in the city.
And you have two kinds of models, do you not? An inside model and an outside model.
Correct. We have an indoor and an outdoor. The indoor is a more closed environment agriculture where you control and monitor all the parameters and you secure constant supply in terms of quality and price. And the outdoor, which is more, I would say, wild growing of fruit and vegetables, and have the access to anybody that passed this wall to pick up is lettuce or tomato or any type of herbs for his tea and to enjoy a fresh crop for his eating and drinking.
Okay, folks. Well, we are in very interesting territory here. Here in the United States, we're accustomed to having so much land. And you look up coast to coast, there's nothing but beautiful farmland for the most part. And so space has been traditionally very available, but not so much if you look toward the city. And so we're looking at a technology that may bring new life to cities. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson with Guy Alitzer, CEO, Vertical Field, and you. We will be right back. We're going to find out what crops grow best.
History buffs, this tale from Michael Olson's Tales from a Tin Can took place while the USS Dale steamed through the Bering Sea, January 1943.
We took some terrible waves up there. One time a big groundswell rolled us over so far I thought we'd never make it back. I was on the lee deck when the ship went over into that roll. Luckily, I was able to grab onto a bulkhead handrail, and when the Dale went over, my feet left the deck. I hung there with nothing between my feet and the ocean but air. I was scared. She went over on her beam, paused for a minute, then she shuddered and shook because one of her propellers was out of the water and thrashing air. Slowly, very slowly, she rolled back toward the vertical, and my feet found the deck again. That wave scared the devil out of me.
Tales from a Tin Can contains 424 tales by 44 sailors aboard the USS Dale, from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay. Order your Father's Day copy at talesfromatincan.com. That's talesfromatincan.com. talesfromatincan.com.
And now, more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
We are back. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, what if we could grow a commercial crop right in your backyard or down the street or in the parking lot of a supermarket or anywhere? Guy says we could do that. Guy says we can do that because he is Guy Elitzer of Vertical Field Agriculture in Israel and I guess all around the world. Do you have your containers here in the United States as well, Guy?
Yes, we do. We have for now at the state of New York in a few places. So, yeah, we did start operating in the U.S. as well.
Well, you know, that's what struck me right away when you're talking about container gardens. Now, if I were living in San Diego, I would think, yeah, doesn't quite make sense. Maybe one of the outdoor vertical walls would make sense, but gosh, not really in San Diego. But if you're in New York City or in the Bronx or something like that, where, you know, you have a little bit of good weather during the year, but a lot of bad weather, it would seem to make a lot more sense. So who best would benefit by using one of these vertical field farms to grow crops?
So we believe that the answer is everyone.
Okay.
Whether it's New York with its cold weather, whether it's other places with warm weather, climate is changing, as we all know, and become more drastic, and it affects the consistency of the supply chain. From one side, from the other side, you have more consumers that with higher awareness of the quality and the sourcing of the food. And we believe that at the end of the day, whether it's the first world countries or the third world countries, at the end of the day, the need for fresh and healthy food is a must in a way that it has to be accessible to everyone. I mean, price shouldn't be an issue. And that's what we have done in Vertical Field is the ability to grow fresh produce in a reasonable price compared to the other crops on the shelf. And that's, in our eyes, the vision.
Well, I've been watching vertical agriculture systems and all kinds of mechanized systems for quite a while. And I've always been waiting for one that would actually work. And here on California's Central Coast, we are the like strawberry capital of the universe, simply by virtue of the fact that we have the right climate for growing strawberries 9 months a year. Now, I look at the technology that you're putting on the table, and in many respects, I can see it would transform the strawberry industry. Some of the big obstacles the strawberry industry faces, of course, are the need for very powerful pesticides. We understand that strawberries are the most pesticide-laden fruit on the market, and which kind of has us concerned. But it's also very hard to grow them because you have to find people who are willing and able to stoop down and pick them. And I got to thinking about the kind of technology you're putting on the table, and I got to thinking people might not have to stoop down. They might not have to use pesticides. They might be able to use water much more efficiently. Do you see the possibility of your technology transforming an industry like the strawberry industry?
For sure, for sure. Strawberry is a good example of a big industry that has a season and off-season with different types of quality and prices, with complexity, agronomical complexity, as you mentioned, of pesticide. And we are developing a farm that will be able to grow strawberry 365 days a year, no pesticides whatsoever. And again, it's the same farm that is going to be positioned as close to the consumer and provide strawberry, whether it's winter or summer or autumn, and with the quality with no pesticides, and again the level of freshness and the level of health will be completely different.
Well, I probably shouldn't tell the local strawberry farmers about your business then, huh?
Not yet.
Okay, but here is something, a technology that has the potential to transform an industry like the strawberry industry in that. you can grow, you should be able to grow strawberries all year long, anywhere.
Correct, exactly. And different type of strawberry can be grown anywhere over the entire year. And that's, you know, that's an advantage in many places. So you asked me before to whom this farm is designed. So we truly believe that it's designed to everyone and everywhere, because strawberry is a good example that if you can grow it along the years, you give an edge to this to the consumer alongside the years in different climate change.
What about sweet corn? I can't see sweet corn working so well.
Right. So there's still complexity in some crops. We do envision ourselves providing fresh fruit and vegetables, the different types of them in later stage down the road in the years. I would say that the challenge is not necessarily the agronomical challenge versus the economical challenge of that, making that economically. I think that's part of the R&D that we're bringing into the table, part of our technology that enable us now in later stages to grow fresh fruit and vegetables in the farm nearby the store. And there are challenges, of course, and that's why we're doing the R&D to enable to grow different types of crops down the road.
What do you see as the most promising crops right now?
So surprisingly, I would say that mushroom has a critical needs in different places, different countries. And fresh mushrooms is something that, you know, people is willing to pay a lot of money for that. And I guess that if you are able to grow mushrooms, again, nearby the supermarkets and pick it as it grows and harvest it on the same day and the consumer can benefit from fresh mushrooms, that's something that we are about to launch in 2021. And we truly believe that it will be a great news for the consumer.
And the thing about mushrooms, of course, they don't need much light.
Exactly.
So it's a crop that really would be able to eat readily, slip into your technological modular vertical farm. Wow. So there it is, folks. It's a good possibility right up here on front. And that would make it easy then to grow mushrooms right outside the supermarket. And people could almost take part in that. Consumers could almost get a vision of how their mushrooms are going and almost see them, right?
Correct, exactly. So the farm is nearby the entrance. There's a glass where the consumer park their car, go through the entrance, they see the farm, they see inside the farm, they see the farmers, the operator that operate the farm. And 2 seconds later, they find themselves in the shelves buying the mushroom that was picked half an hour before. So the entire shopping experience is different. The consumer will be able to benefit from the, I would say, experience of the farms and, of course, from the fresh mushrooms on the shelf.
And so what traditionally is grown in big warehouses and big factories now could be grown on demand in the cities.
Absolutely. That's the entire idea of that it will be closer to the consumer, and the consumer can see it and buy it and be part of this experience and gain all the benefits of that.
Well, speaking of benefits, you have an interesting list of advantages for this kind of technology over the conventional technologies of agriculture that are now being employed. One is that you are able to increase the varieties of food crops available to the consumer.
Correct. So our technology is based on growing a method which called geophonic, which is a soil base. We believe that at the end of the day, and at the beginning of the day, God creates the plant inside the soil, and where you grow the plants based on soil, you get a better level of textures, taste, and quality of the crops, level of vitamins, of course, and nutrition. And with our growing platform, basically, which facilitates the entire farming into something that is more simpler, friendly using, it makes the farms a farm that can be managed by an unskilled person. I mean, you don't have to be a farmer or an agronomist. Anyone can be an urban farmer, I would say, after a short training, with a nice IoT system that collect and manage and monitor the entire growing cycles and parameters over the years. And basically, the intention is that when you are in the city, you don't have a lot of farmers and agronomists, and you have to have a farm that can be managed by anyone almost. And that's exactly where our farm goes and what we aim to develop under our farm.
Well, I'd like to back up just a little bit, if we might, because one of my principal complaints about mechanized systems of the sort of which you speak is that they tend to rely on synthetic ingredients, most notably synthetic soils, which is to say inert soils. But I think I heard you talk about using real soil, did I?
Exactly. We're using real soil like in nature. The only thing is that we are monitoring the parameters to be the optimal. Basically, we provide the plant the best day it could ever get outside every day in the farm. All the rest are pure and naturals and real, the soil, the growing cycles, the plant themselves, no GMO, completely organic, no pesticide, completely natural.
There you go. Now, zero pesticides. How do you keep the bugs out?
Well, we have first, as I said, a closed environment with all the parameters to make sure that bugs are kept outside. The agronomical protocol is very strict. And by that we avoid having bugs inside the farm. That's the reason consumer cannot get in, just to look from outside to inside. And there's one person that goes in, and he's the farmer, he's the urban farmer, and with a special suit and all of that, so protection suit. And by that we are keeping the farm sterilized and zero bugs, and doesn't need to use any type of pesticide.
So it's kind of like farming in white boots.
Yeah, you can say that. Yeah, yeah.
Good. Modular and movable.
Correct. So modular is the fact that the farm is inside the container, so you can put a few farms, one nearby the others. You can have a farm in different places and manage them as a one unit. You can have different crops in different farms, so the flexibility and the modularity of that is super wide and super super flexible in that sense. And the farm can be portable, can be moved from one place to the other, and quite easy. You put it on a truck and you move it. I think the advantage of that flexibility, especially in the city where things are changing so dynamic and so fast, that's a great advantage to that, and basically provide a tool for any types of consumer or customers that can move the farm from one place to the other without additional cost and burden on that. And I think that's another advantage of our farm.
You know, another thing that strikes me about the movability is that it reduces the cost of land. Because if you're not in the ground and movable, then whoever owns the land doesn't have a lot over you because you can pick up and move.
Exactly.
But if you're in the ground and you develop the ground, then whoever owns the land has the advantage. But if you can just pick up and move, if the terms aren't right, that gives the farmer far more flexibility and reduces the cost significantly.
Correct. It put the farmer in a position, as you said, where it's not depending on the landlord. You can move the farm from one place to the other, in terms of prices, of course, and availability. It has also another element of, if we are talking about land, because in a 40-foot containers, we are growing approximately a yield of 3/4 acre of open field.
Wait a minute. You said, say that again now. In one container?
In 40-foot containers, we are growing a yield of 1/3 of an acre of open field.
So you can take what you're saying is that you can take a third of an acre and put it into a 40-foot container.
Exactly. So just imagine yourself how many land we can get, we can give away to nature, and doing agriculture in a less land than it captured today, and provide more lands to nature or to other uses. There's a significant impact on that in terms of agriculture, in terms of land and carbon captures and other elements that vertical farming can bring beside of just having healthy food.
Maybe we can bring the buffalo back.
Well, that's, you know, that's an advantage, no doubt.
Well, there are a couple of other really big advantages that I wanted to touch on. One, of course, is less water. And the other is the management. Is how on earth do you run these things? You must have to have a PhD in computer technology or something like that. We're going to pick those up when we come back. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Today we're with Guy Elitzur, who is, did I pronounce that right, Guy?
Yes. Elitzur.
Elitzur. He is the chief executive officer of the Israel's Vertical Field Company. Made the comment earlier that those folks in Israel had to become really clever, really fast about how they went about the business of growing food. And they have, through the years, become very clever. And this is one of those clever innovations. Who knows where it could take us? Maybe, as we were saying earlier, it will allow us to bring the buffalo back. Who knows? Food Chain Radio Program, Michael Olson, Guy Elitzur, CEO of Israel's Vertical Field Company. We will be right back after these messages.
You can earn a substantial income by farming for the city. All you need to do is take your crop to market and win the competition for the consumer dollars. There is a well-proven strategy for winning this competition. You will find it embedded in MetroFarm, the guide to growing in or near the city for the city.
Polyface Farms, Joel Salatin.
Few how-to books could be more appropriate for our times than MetroFarm, a truly comprehensive manual. MetroFarm makes the whole embedded food system doable. It's a must-read.
USDA Director Bud Kerr.
Big book. MetroFarm describes the agronomic, economic, and managerial concepts required to generate substantial profits from agricultural locales near metropolitan areas.
Before you plant your seeds, pick up a copy of the Ben Franklin Book of the Year award-winning MetroFarm. Then plant your seeds and win the dollars. MetroFarm.com. MetroFarm.com.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
A couple of very interesting elements to this whole notion of vertical farming, where you take a farm and you tilt it up on its edge. And Guy was telling us, my goodness, you can take a third of an acre and tip it up on its edge and slide it into a 40-foot container. Think of how that could change our world. If we, my goodness, we can take the farm right into the city, into the parking lot of a supermarket, and grow mushrooms. And people could see their mushrooms being grown and walk into the store and buy them. Wow. A lot of very interesting potential, Guy. First of all, tell us about water and how you're making it. Water is always a precious commodity. A very precious commodity in agriculture, and I suppose especially so in Israel, where they invented drip irrigation. But tell us how your vertical farming can save on water.
So the irrigation system that we're using is very smart and precise. And the fact that you grow your food to height in a vertical way, basically you use gravitation in order to maximize the drop of the water in a better way versus the traditional agriculture, in a way that you're using 90% less water than traditional agriculture. Now, that's also a significant saving in terms of water in a world that you are, as you said, water become more and more precious and more rare, whether it's for drinking or for agriculture. And if you can shift part of the agriculture into that, you're going to save a lot of water.
So the idea being is that when you're growing your crops in a vertical wall, you drip the water in it on the top, and it just gradually works its way down the wall to the bottom. And then
I suppose
you have a way of capturing the water that drips out the bottom and maybe even recycle that. Possible?
Exactly. It's been the residue of the water is being kept, recycled, and used again.
So you mentioned the fact that you're focusing on using organic soil. Well, how do you feed the soil on a vertical wall?
So the plants come with a pot and soil itself, and the soil is getting only organic fertilization, very special fertilization in a way that it's keeping that very safe, very organic, and very healthy. And that's part of the technology that we have developed in a way that it's
And you're not going to tell anybody what it's in this solution, are you?
No, I'm not.
Okay, but we can guess. Having been around the block, we can guess, and it's possible. I know it is possible. Less water, and then doesn't it take a PhD to run these systems of yours? You have a 1/3 of an acre of crops growing in a 40-foot container. Surely, you know, you must have to be really, really smart to make this work.
So there is, we have enough PhD to make sure that the farm is being operated by a non-PhD person. So definitely the farm is a multidisciplinary system with hardware, software, machine learning, agronomical impact, and we have a great R&D team with all this professionality and experience that took the know-how from different aspects and brought it into something that is played together very well and enable the farm to be operated by an unskilled person. So let me tell you the following. I'm not, although I'm managing an agricultural company, I have difficulties to maintain my own plants in the house. And even me, myself, that was after short training, I'm able to manage the farm. So believe me, anyone can manage the farm.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm kind of the opposite. I'm pretty good with plants and whatnot and soil and all of that. But when it comes to technology, if it weren't for my wife, I'd be in really deep trouble all the time. So I wouldn't need to worry. Even a bumbling idiot like myself could work this technology. What happens when something goes wrong? What do I do? Because something always goes wrong.
Exactly, yes. That's how life goes. So farm is monitored by an IoT system that we have developed. It's super smart. It collects the ongoing all the parameters, whether it's the pH, EC, moisture, temperature, and all the others, making sure that it have a preventive treatment before problems occur. And basically, the agronomical protocol are already inside and manage the entire subsystem inside the farm. Inventory is being managed as well, so it's getting order per crops before planting or before seeding. And of course, it manages also the inventory on the shelf of the supermarket in a way that it knows what to supply to the supermarket and the flexibility to provide supermarket whenever you need. So at the end of the day, it's super easy to manage the farm, and the software is very intuitive. So believe me, when time comes, you will be able to manage the farm yourself as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think back to the farmer of 40 centuries that F.H. King was describing in his book, Farmers of 40 Centuries, and how this man was able to on a half acre of land, to support 20 people and bring in a substantial cash income to boot. And so I look at what you're doing here and talking about taking a half acre of land and putting it into a couple 40-foot containers with room to spare. And I got to thinking, there's a lot of potential here in the future. But I haven't ever found any system like yours that is fully functional at this stage of the game. The closest I've seen to systems like yours are the cannabis growers of where it's legal to grow cannabis. You know, people expend a huge amount of effort on a few plants in a relatively small parcel of land. But I haven't found any strawberry farmers yet. Where do you see the future going? Where do you see your technology becoming economically competitive with those who farm outside?
Well, it's a good question. I think that at the beginning, the crops that we are growing right now are economic in a way that the price on the shelf of the supermarket is equal or lower than the comparable crop. And definitely adding more crops, more variety of fruit and vegetables, fresh fruit and vegetables, that's our goal and that's our mission. And the main challenge is making that economic. And we believe that with the innovation and R&D and the reduction of the cost of system, we'll be able to provide economically more fruit and vegetables as we go along. And there's no reason why not. Most of the fruit and vegetables can be grown inside the container in economic way. It's an issue of cracking few elements, and that's what my team and myself are doing, in order to be able to grow more and more fresh fruit and vegetable in the city.
And I see you taking this technology around the world to some developing nations too. What is the reaction there?
I think that's, it's first, people are in shock. They don't believe it's doable. And it's a digesting process we see in many, in most of the people. They're asking questions. They don't believe first it can grow. Second, if it's economic, it's being perceived as something that is very expensive, which is not. But then, you know, the enthusiasm and passion come, and they're fully engaged with that, and they fully appreciate that. And once they start tasting and smelling the produce, then we have repeating customers, and that's what happened in every country that we work.
Now, I recall seeing on your website video of young children looking at these vertical walls and vertical farms, and the amazement in their eyes as they kind of reach out to touch it. Is it real? Is it real?
Exactly.
And if anybody could see, you know, into the future without fear, I suspect it would be children who aren't embedded as, you know, their parents and grandparents are embedded in a technology that dates back a long, long time. And a technology that's really keyed into space, a lot of space. And as I look at what you're doing, it's almost like spaceship technology, is it not?
Yeah, it's you know, the part of the technology are very looks like a space, as you mentioned, and this new generation that you just mentioned, they're super technology and they're super supportive of technology, but you know what? They are super far from a farm. Understanding how farming is being done is that something that is important, because this generation has to take the ownership and responsibility of making this world fitted in the future. And I think that our responsibility is to make sure that they are taught and educated in a way that they're understanding farming, understanding how to do farming, how to improve farming, how to do the farming of the future. We have a special project here in the country with schools, where schools are with the students are part of the farming aspect, educated by what is agriculture and farms and how technology is being done inside. And at the end of the day, educated also on taking responsibility of how food is grown. And we believe that's super, super important to educate the future generation of taking responsibility of that.
And it's fun too, right?
Correct, exactly.
It's fun. In thinking about this and in looking way into the future, I can almost see supermarkets becoming transformed into urban farms.
Well, you have a good vision. You're right. You're right. Absolutely. You know that at the end of the day, supermarkets, we believe, will grow on their own food locally, and consumer can come in and pick it like they picked from their own backyard. And the freshness, you're going to gain the freshness produce you can ever get. And we do see trends in the supermarkets. You know, we're talking about meat, we're talking about cheese, everything. People are looking for fresh and healthy. And that's definitely true for produce. And definitely you're going to find in the future supermarket a place where there's a garden, and they grow together with technology fruit and vegetable, and just pick it up and go home and eat something that is fresh and healthy, no pesticides. Yeah, that's the future, no doubt.
So how much does it cost of a container? How much is it? How much is a third, or what did you say, a third of an acre container? What does it cost?
So it depends on the size of the containers. We're talking about a few tens of thousands of dollars. But the main issue is that the return of investment is super short. We're talking about something that's less than a year. So if somebody is buying that, he's getting his money back in less than a year, and then he starts generating profit. And that's, you know, the super fast in retail and in agriculture. And part of having an efficient farm makes the entire economic model super attractive and potent.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I've watched the cannabis growers use is those side-by-side rooms, where one room will start a crop and the other room will be growing a crop out. So in doing so, you have a very continuous supply of product.
Correct. Correct. So you definitely, when you're dealing with agriculture, you have to think about the entire cycle from seeding all the way to the harvesting. And that's what we're doing, whether it's inside one farm, depends on the quantity, or whether it's different farms come all together into a continuous seeding and a growing and harvesting process. You know, you want to have the entire process on site. Control that, monitor that in a way that the crop you get the best crop on the shelf of the supermarket.
Okay, I shall now ask you the tough question. Guy Alitzor of Vertical Field, what's wrong with this idea?
What's wrong?
Yes, there must be something wrong. What is it?
I think that the main limitation is the variety of crops, and I think that's at this point. I think that at the end of the day, being able to grow it economically, wider variety of crops, I think that's the main challenge, and that's something that we're still lacking as vertical farming industry. I'm sure it's going to be cracked in a few years, I think. Us and the others are working on developing farms that will be able to grow more crops. The main challenge is to widen the offer to the consumer.
Wow. Guy Alitzor, CEO of Vertical Fields. And folks, you can always find Vertical Fields just by searching for Vertical Fields, because there's not a lot of vertical field companies around, and Guy heads one of them. Go to the website, Vertical Fields, and check it out. Very fascinating, a very fascinating future we have ahead of us. Remember Michael Olson's second law of the food chain: the farther you go from the source of your food, the less control you have over what's in that food. Thank you, Guy.
Thank you, Michael. It was a pleasure. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.